face bore the pale, unmistakable look of dissipation. One of his feet was cased in folds of linen as it rested on the soft velvet ottoman, speaking of gout as plainly as any foot ever spoke yet. It would seem, to look at the man as he sat there, that he had grown old before his time, and so he had. His years were barely 49, yet in all save years he was an aged man. A noted character had been the Earl of Mount Severn, not that he'd been a renowned politician, or a great general, or an eminent statesman, or even an active member in the upper house. Not for any of these had the Earl's name been in the mouths of men. But for the most reckless among the reckless, for the spendthrift among spendthrifts, for the gamester above all gamesters, and for a gay man outstripping the gay. By these characteristics did the world know Lord Mount Severn. It was said his faults were those of his head, that a better heart or a more generous spirit never beat in human form, and there was much truth in this. It had been well for him had he lived and died plain William Vane. Up to his 25th year, he had been industrious and steady, had kept his terms in the temple, and studied late and early. The sober application of William Vane had been a byword with the embryo barristers around. Judge Vane, they ironically called him, and they strove ineffectually to allure him away to idleness and pleasure. But young Vane was ambitious, and he knew that on his own talents and exertions must depend his own rising in the world. He was of excellent family, but poor, counting a relative in the old Earl of Mount Severn. The possibility of his succeeding to the earldom never occurred to him for three healthy lives, two of them young, stood between him and the title. Yet those have died off, one of apoplexy, one of fever in Africa, the third boating at Oxford. And the young Temple student, William Vane, suddenly found himself Earl of Mount Severn and the lawful possessor of 60,000 a year. His first idea was that he should never be able to spend the money, that such a sum year by year could not be spent. It was a wonder his head was not turned by adulation at the onset, for he was courted, flattered, and caressed by all classes, from a royal duke downward. He became the most attractive man of his day, the lion in society, for independent of his newly acquired wealth and title, he was of distinguished appearance and fascinating manners. But unfortunately the prudence which had sustained William Vane, the poor law student, in his solitary temple chambers, entirely forsook William Vane, the young Earl of Mount Severn, and he commenced his career on a scale of speed so great that all staid people said he was going to ruin and the deuce headlong. But a peer of the realm, and one whose rent roll is 60,000 per annum, does not go to ruin in a day. There sat the Earl, in his library now, in his 49th year, and ruin had not come yet. That is, it had not overwhelmed him. But the embarrassments which had clung to him, and been the destruction of his tranquillity, the bane of his existence, who shall describe them? The public knew them pretty well, his private friends knew better, his creditors best, but none save himself knew, or could ever know, the worrying torment that was his portion, well nigh driving him to distraction. Years ago, by dint of looking things steadily in the face, and by economizing, he might have retrieved his position. But he had done what most people do in such cases. Put off the evil day sine die, and gone on increasing his enormous list of debts. The hour of exposure and ruin was now advancing fast. Perhaps the Earl himself was thinking so, as he sat there before an enormous mass of papers which strewed the library table. His thoughts were back in the past. That was a foolish match of his, that Gretna Green match for love.